The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, 13th day of December, 2012. The Dow's down 28 points, the S&P is down 4, COP is down 10, gold is down $17.70 an ounce, crude is off 63 cents a barrel, and Solar City is up on its IPO day $2.96. Update on the fiscal cliff, Republican House Speaker John Boehner gave another update this morning regarding the fiscal cliff negotiations, and there have been few developments since he spoke to us yesterday, addressed reporters, and indicated that there was little progress. So today's progress report, the same as yesterday's, there has been little progress. Boehner says he is going to double down on hammering the president again on the necessity of spending cuts. And now Senator Harry Reid is taking his turn at the microphone to pretty much say the same thing, I guess. If you've been out to the Google App Store today, or I'm sorry, the Apple App Store, where, guess what, the number one app is, that's right, Google Maps for iPhone. It was only released last night in answer to the big mistake that Apple made when they kicked Google to the curb and launched their own map program, or map app, or native map app. And so Google said, we'll fix this, and they put out an app, and they had to go through the same channels as any other developer, and get it approved, and get it into the software store, into the app store, and they finally got it approved, and blah, blah, and it went live last night, and if you go look at the charts, it's already the number one app in the Apple App Store. Google, as expected, delivered its long-awaited Maps app for the iPhone, and as expected, it's really, really good. The new app is a dramatic improvement over the old Google Maps for iPhone, and it's far better than the new Apple Maps app that's the default app on all new iPhones and iPads. Because I have an iPhone 4G or 4GS, I think it's iPhone, whatever it is, whatever iPhone I have, it still has the old Google Maps on it. And while it was a little confusing to figure out how to use it, and I have a first-generation iPad that's running the original Google Maps, and it was a little confusing at first to figure out how to use that thing and how to get the directions, but once you do figure it out, okay, it's pretty slick. It just kind of works. Now, the Google Map app for iPhone, according to the reviews, is fast, functional, beautifully designed, and most importantly, unlike the Apple Map app, won't get you lost. We now have turn-by-turn directions, street view, public transit directions, and walking directions all in the same place. Now, Apple Maps, in all fairness, did get a few things better than the Google. You can't navigate turn-by-turn via the iPhone's lock screen, and the Apple Maps does have 3D functionality baked right into the Map app. But despite all the shortcomings, if you want to make sure you get to where you're trying to go, you just need to go out to the App Store with your iPhone, download Google Maps for iPhone, and you'll never be lost again. Today we had an IPO. CEO Chairman Elon Musk, they have a picture of him here at the NASDAQ. He's the, it's the latest high-risk company that he's IPO'd, SolarCity. It opened at $9.25 a share. It was priced at $8, a steep cut from what was originally requested, which was $13 to $15 a share. But in hindsight now, they're probably very happy that they did that because they're able to say that they're up $3 on their IPO day. Now, this has to do with Elon Musk's popularity from his other companies. Anything to do with solar these days is a bit considered to be high risk. But with his name attached to it, there's a chance that it will do quite well. Walmart has got some explaining to do. They have 5,563 unanswered questions from consumers on their Facebook page. That's a lot. But bear in mind, Walmart was asked 10,496 questions on Facebook from September 1 through December 11. Now, it's managed to answer 47% of them. That's from Social Bakers, a social media analytics firm. Arch-rival Target, by contrast, has 1,879 unanswered questions, and its staff answered 60% of the 4,763 questions that were posed. The numbers give a glimpse at how labor-intensive it can be for a big brand to have a popular Facebook page with a lot of fans. Walmart and Target have about 26 million and 21 million Facebook fans, respectively. Once a company has established an army of fans on Facebook, it can't not deal with them. But companies are stuck with always-on social media communication, whether they like it or not. The difference between Walmart and Target's ability to answer questions on Facebook, 47% to 60% respectively, shows that Target is doing a pretty good job of holding its own. Can you imagine if that was your job, to wake up every morning to the Walmart or the Target Facebook page and to have to try to answer all of those questions? It's not something one person could do.
And they probably most of them probably are more than questions and probably complaints.
They are. Right? There are people whining. Hey, how come my shopping cart wheel always wobbles? Huh? Why is that? Why? Now, stocks surged yesterday after Ben Bernanke announced the Federal Reserve would assign unemployment rate and inflation rate thresholds to guide monetary policy. So now there's actually a target out there. But as Bernanke gave his post-announcement press conference, the rally evaporated and stocks basically ended flat for the day. You can see on the chart that I have up here, that's if you can see my charts. If you can't see my charts, go to the homepage of CFRN.net. Click the red, white, and blue button that says click here. That'll take you to a page that will get you in. Just follow the directions. You'll be able to see the charts. For those who can't see the charts, here's the big run-up on the Fed. Then we put in, and I mentioned this yesterday during the program, and I even put a little circle around it. I said, in candlespeak, that's bearish. Okay, and sure enough, it took the market all the way back down to the 1426 level. Now, look what happened as we got to this zone. We just passed right through it in that 1 hourly candle. So what does that tell us? It tells us that we're probably going to come back to that zone to revisit it and do some more consolidating. It's exactly what happened overnight. Prices rose. We got back to the 1430/31 weekly trading zone. Right there, we hit it to the tick. We come back to 1423.5, and if we look left, the previous swing low was at 23.25, and then last night the swing low was 23.5. Now remember, weekly trading zones are an area. The market started to rally, got right back up to 1430.31. Remember, this is an hourly chart. So right here on the hourly at the weekly zone, we put in a little double top. The market's come off pretty hard here in the last hour, hour and a half, and we're right back down to 1422.23. So here we were. Today is December the 13th, a Thursday. On Tuesday, December the 11th, here we were trading along in the zone at 22.23. We raced up to 31, back down to 23, back up to 31, consolidated for a great number of hours, then put in the Fed rally, sold off, came back to the zone at 30, down to the zone at 23, back up to the zone at 30, and back down to the zone at 23. These numbers, a reminder, do go out to the CFRN partners before the market opens every Monday. Okay? Once the numbers are out, they're carved in stone, they don't change. So if having that kind of information before the market even opens for the week, if you think that could be beneficial for you, you need to take a free trial. If you've already taken your free trial, and if your free trial is about to expire, we have a partners meeting tonight. You can be a part of that meeting. All you have to do is send an email to support@cfrn.net. Michael will be happy to go over everything with you, and we'll get the necessary paperwork over so that you can get it filled out and taken care of prior to the meeting tonight, so you can be with us at 9 p.m. Eastern for the partners meeting. Now, everyone's blaming Ben's press conference on the sell-off, but Art Cashin says not so quick. As Ben was talking during the press conference, Ray Dalio was also preaching gloom and doom over at the New York Times Deal Book Conference. Art Cashin says that traders think Dalio should share the blame. Cashin's comments this morning, the other guy, some traders felt that Mr. Bernanke should not be blamed, credited with all of the pullback. They point to some particularly downbeat comments from hedge fund icon Ray Dalio. Speaking at a New York conference, Dalio said that most financial assets were already fully priced and many are overvalued. The next good play may be shorting bonds as rates rise in late 2013. That, of course, depends on the Fed's new targeting program. When pressed whether there is any asset that he might still invest in, Ray said he thought there might still be some room in agricultural property in Australia. I don't know if he was trying to make a joke there or if he was being serious, but it's not a very broad selection. Now, some felt that Dalio's comments contributed to the afternoon evaporation. Now, you would think, well, let me just read you the headline. Police taser Chinese woman after she tried to buy too many iPhones. Let me say that again. Police taser Chinese woman after she tries to buy too many iPhones. Now, where do you think this happened? Beijing? No. Newton, Massachusetts. Zhao Ji Li bought two iPhones at an Apple store in Newton, Massachusetts last Friday. Then she went back this week to buy two more. She told the clerk it was for her family in China. Apple store employees refused to sell her the iPhones. The company doesn't want iPhones going onto the black market when they should be going into legitimate customer hands. Zhao Ji Li insisted and refused to leave the store. Then she whips out her iPhone and starts to make a video. Apple store employees called security, who called the police. A scuffle ensued, and the police tasered Zhao Ji Li. They could have pepper sprayed her, I suppose. They tasered her. They charged her with trespassing and resisting arrest. And if you go over to the Fortune magazine website, there's a video with her. You can hear her shrieking in the background as they taser her. What would Steve Jobs think about that? He'd probably support it. One last thing in the headlines. Following North Korea's missile success earlier this week, U.S. officials told NBC late yesterday that the space vehicle is spinning out of control above the Earth. The satellite was placed in low Earth orbit on Wednesday and has been cruising pole to pole ever since. South Korea has now come out saying that NBC's comments are wrong and that the satellite is in fact orbiting normally. So there's some conflicting comments. There's a guy over on Reddit that claims he is monitoring Song 3, however you do that, and he says it's not okay. Korea says it is. This will be in the headlines quite a bit. I mean, there's more to it than the weather satellite. This has to do with nuclear stuff. So, if you've been nostalgic for the Cold War, welcome back. All right, that's about it for headlines. We'll talk more about SolarCity in the show today. We'll talk more about what the Fed had to say yesterday. They've actually put a target out there, so at least the economy has something to aim at. Interest rates could stay long for a while yet. However, the Fed did launch QE4, as we wrote about on the blog. Twist is expiring. Not only will they continue to buy $40 in mortgage-backed securities, $40 billion a month, they'll also be buying $45 billion a month in treasuries. And we're kind of the only people that show up at our own auctions anymore. At what point does the rest of the world start to see this as a Ponzi scheme? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say that out loud. Boston, I'll send it over to you. Boston?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
Boston's asleep.
I just got a quick email.
You ready?
Boston, it's coming over to me. Let me respond. Let me respond quickly in two words to the email.
Okay.
All right. I just did. All right. I'll take the charts and I'll go over everything. No, definitely wasn't from you, Frank. and I'll go over everything that that we did this morning. All right. All right. Let me do this first. Let me grab the charts. Here we go. There. All right. I'll minimize that. All right. Hey, we did something for the first time ever today. I'll go over that in the recap. All right. All right. Here we go, guys. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, December 13th, 2012. Let's go over the results. We'll start right out with the results, right? On gold, we were plus 39 ticks. On crude oil, we were minus 8. And on the NQ, we ended plus 4. Okay, so plus 39, minus 8, plus 4 is how we ended it. There were opportunities for me to get that plus 8 back positive, but I ended up missing them. Oh, wait. I missed another one, too. The natural gas. We're plus 8 ticks on natural gas as well. I forgot I gotta write that down. Natural gas, and we're plus 8 ticks on that. All right. Now, let's start off with the NQ, because that's where we started trading the day. All right. Before I go further, let me say, if you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply, sign up for the free trial. In the free trial, all we ask for is your name and your email address. You will be sent an email from us with links to videos that show you how to download everything you see here, that really teach you how to get all set up. And once you get your charts downloaded, if you want them to look just like mine, you just need to send a quick email to support@cfrn.net and ask me to send you my layout. And I will send you my layout with a little video telling you how to import it, and then your charts will look just like mine as soon as you open them up in the morning. All right. We have a partners meeting tonight, Dwayne mentioned. This, I believe, is number 90. So for 90, the last 90, actually the last 92 weeks, the last 90 weeks, we've had partners meetings. We've had partners meetings every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, except for two Thanksgivings. We managed to take two Thursdays off in the last 90 weeks. Again, it's tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Reminded all the partners. And for anyone who's out there on the free trial, you need to become a partner to get into that meeting tonight. If you don't know how to become a partner, send a quick email to support@cfrn.net or just type it in here. And I'll send you all the information you need to become a partner. Get in there tonight. Anybody who's interested in becoming a partner, you know, if you've taken the free trial in the past and you want to become a partner, get into that thing tonight, or, you know, just have access to it tomorrow, perhaps. You know, just send us an email. support@cfrn.net. Okay. All right. The NQ. Now we started right off trading the NQ. Okay, right at the open. Let's see. We nailed the first three trades. It was 9:34. We got long right here. The market moved up right after the open. I missed this right here. Okay, I missed this nice one right here. Then I took this one. And I don't remember how many ticks I took, but I took some profit on that one. The market drew down, it topped right here. And it started to come down. And as it was coming down, it crossed through the BBC right here, pulled back up, tested the BBC, gave a down close. On the down close, I looked down here. We had bearish divergence, so I shorted the down close, and I took some profit on that. And I promptly missed another one here and another one here. But I took this one over here, so I had profit on that as well. At this point right here at 9:43, so it was the first 13 minutes or so, I was up 12 ticks, I think, on the NQ. If I had taken this one right here, I probably would have been up probably 18 or so ticks, 18, 20 ticks on the NQ in the first 13 minutes. I took this trade. They took back 8 ticks on that one. I lost that one. I missed this. That didn't actually finish setting up because the it was borderline. I remember looking at it and saying it was really right on the borderline here because the black line was right on top of the green when we got the up close. So I'll just take that off. I did miss this one. I took this one and got a break even on it after, you know, after it went up and put in some profit. I moved my stop up to break even. And, you know, when it closed up here, I moved my stop up to break even and it came back and took me out. I didn't take any more trades on the NQ, but there were many more trades to be taken. You can see in here, this is going on to like 12:30, but there was one here, one here, one here, one here, and one here, where you could have easily, you know, easily quadrupled what I got in the first half hour, anyway. Just going through, you can see the same things happening over and over and over and over and over again. Okay? Over and over and over again. And, you know, right into the close. It was this huge move down right here. The close of the morning session, I mean. There was that huge move down right there. There was another one right here. And this one right here, by the time it closed down, the black was above the BBC, so there was no trade there on the short side. Just looking to see if we could have gotten anything on the long side here. Yep, we would have gotten stopped out on the long side right here. All right, you would have gotten long right there. Had twin towers right here. Bang, it dropped down. So you would have lost 8 ticks on that one if you were trading it, okay? But you would have gotten it right back right there. And again, right here where we are now. This is a 4-tick range chart on the NQ. Now, I'm going to show you a bunch of different markets, and what I want you to take away from this is that it's the same set of indicators and the same trade setup on all the markets, okay? All the different markets. They're all 4-tick range, and they all have the same trade setup, okay? The same set of indicators, same stuff. That's what you need to take away from this, all right? This was the NQ. We ended up plus 4 ticks on the NQ. I want to show natural gas, if I can find that thing, because I had never traded natural gas until today. Hold on a minute. Let me see if I can find it. GNGF3, is that right? Where the heck is it? Hang on. I'll find it. Here it is. All right. Natural gas came out today at 10:30. Natural gas report came out. You know, I know Dwayne and David had talked about natural gas in the past, and Bert, too. And I've never looked at it. I've never tried to apply our stuff to it. So today I did. I'll show you the trade that I took. Well, the first trade that I took 1 tick profit on just to find out how much it was per tick. But the next trade that I took was this one right here. The same exact stuff that we just applied on the what chart was it? The NQ chart we were looking at. Right here, price pulled back up toward the BBC. I drew a trend line. We're getting some bearish divergence. It had so much momentum that it closed down below the trend line before it hit the BBC, so I shorted right here, and I took some profit right down here. Okay, that was my first trade ever on natural gas. Well, first one using this setup. But let's just go through this, okay? The same exact stuff that we were doing over there on the NQ. This is another 4-tick range. It's the first time I've looked at it today, and it's the same stuff, all right, just over and over and over again. Right here, the pullback up to the BBC with some bearish divergence. You can sell the short right here, sell the down close. Over here, sell the close down below the trend line, or you could have just sold the down close off the BBC, okay? And this was the one that I did take, because I sold the down close right there, bought the up close right here. I walked through this one with everyone in the live trading room this morning. It was right after the close of the live trading room. But we had the up close right here, and I said, 371 was the spot right there to get long. It actually drew down to 370, so you would have gotten filled. And when it moved up, I said you might want to take profit right up here because I was looking left, and right up here is where I was thinking it was going to stall. Right over here is where I was thinking it was going to stall. And so there was an opportunity to take some more profit on that. Since then, there was one more right here, and I don't have this one indicator I don't have on here right now, the black line. But if I were to put that on, I think right here we would have not taken any trade right here on the short side. We would be looking to take one over here with the bearish divergence. Okay? With this bearish divergence. Let's see. Right there. A close down below that trend line would probably do it for us. All right? But I did take the time to go back here on the natural gas and outline some things. Now, this right here between 10:30 and 10:31, this whole shaded area was 1 minute. All right, when the natural gas report came out, so we wouldn't be doing any trading in there. But right after that, you know, there was an indication there, there, and there to go long. All three of those you could have gotten long on. Over here, there was a spot to get short right before natural gas came out. Here, a spot to get long. Here to get short. And, well, they were going too far into the pre-market there, but I just wanted to show everybody. Today was the first time we ever looked at natural gas, and we traded it, and the same stuff just transfers from market to market to market to market. All right, I'm going to slide that off. And let's see, what else did we trade? We traded the NQ crude oil. I'll show you crude. We lost one trade on crude. We got a break even on another trade. I'll show you what we did. There were a bunch of opportunities on the crude. I just was too busy doing everything else to actually take them. Right in here, I went long on the up close right here with the bullish divergence. I went long on the up close, and it came down and stopped me out right away. All right, that was shortly after the open. The more conservative thing to do would have been to wait for a close up above this trend line, but we never got that. It turned around, it came down here. I could have shorted right here if I'd have been watching and gotten that back, but I wasn't, clearly wasn't watching. Let's see, it got pretty choppy right in here. I wasn't really paying all that much attention to it. You know, up here there was a little bit of an opportunity on the long side, a little bit of an opportunity on the short side, not much, just enough to bring your stop to break even probably. Right in here, there was a good opportunity on the long side right there. Let's just see. I haven't gone all the way through and drawn all the trend lines on this. So, you know, another long opportunity right here, but pretty short-term one. You know, just enough to get your stop up to break even, it looks like. I did take a short over here, and this almost went down and brought me back to even on the day. I had moved my stop to break even once we got a close down here. And it came back up and took me out at break even. Shortly after that, there were some, you know, some pretty good measured moves on the way up, and could have taken some profit on those, but we were in the break period here. Our morning session ended right about here. All right. So that was crude oil this morning. I ended down 8 ticks on the crude. Okay. Right there is an opportunity that's happening right now. A down close on that. Right here was one that happened a little while ago. You see how we have bearish divergence down here right now. As we speak, we have bearish divergence. The cycle's a little bit blue, so you'd really want it to hit the BBC and close below this trend line. And then you could take that short. Okay? That is the crude oil. Now, let me... What else did I trade? Crude, natural gas, the NQ, gold. All right. Gold had a ton of opportunity this morning. We ended up with plus 39 ticks. We took a few trades, but we didn't take a whole bunch, too. Okay, Frank, I'll go look at the beans, but I didn't take any trades on the beans this morning, but I'll look at them in a minute. Okay. Let's see. I am... looking here, I'm going through all the statements and questions and stuff. I just want to make sure that we've got everything covered in here. I don't know about Ben, Robin, Dwayne, New. Okay, all right. Here we go. On the gold. The same exact stuff. It's another 4-tick range chart. The same stuff applies. If you were trading the gold this morning and let's say you were looking for, you know, 6, 8, 10 ticks, you were done by 9:37. Okay? 9:37. right here, you would have taken a long right above this close above this trend line right here, drew down one tick. 1693.1 was the entry, went up to 1694.2. There's 11 ticks right there. That's 932.52. So maybe in 3 minutes you could have been done if you're looking for 10 ticks. The next one, it had bullish divergence to support the trade, Tim. The next one here took a little longer. It was, entry was at 1693.6. There was no drawdown on that. Okay. And that went up to 1694.5. So right here, between here and here, was $190 a contract was available to you. And that was in the first 6 or 7 minutes. Okay. Price pulled back and went through the BBC right here. We didn't have any divergence. I didn't draw a trend line on it. If you were waiting for the close above the trend line, you would have had the black line cross down below the green right here to disqualify any more trades on the long side until everything got back up above it right in here. All right, so there was another opportunity right here to get long and another one right here to get long. I missed all that. In that first half an hour over there, I was focused on the NQ at the time, I think. Let me bring something over here that I just showed you a minute ago. Okay, this was the crude oil that I showed you a minute ago. The close down below that trend line right there. Bang. So in the time that it took me to discuss this little bit on gold, crude dropped from 86.56 down to 86.42. That's $140 a contract. All right. Just want to show you that the stuff just keeps working. All right, so I missed all those opportunities in this one. I took this one. I finally took this one over here. Was this my first one? I guess it was my first one. And I got in here on the up close. Okay. I missed this one right behind the arrow. There's one right here. I could have gotten in a little bit better. Taking a little bit of profit on that. And then the next one was right here on the up close with bullish divergence. I got long right there and it took off. I mean, it literally just took off. And so I took a whole bunch of profit up here. Okay, the next one was, I mean, this one was like 30 ticks, something like that. The next one was over here. Tested the BBC and gave an up close, but the cycle was headed down, so I didn't have the divergence I like. So I waited for the up close above that trend line, got long there, took a little bit of profit. The next one over here on the in the other direction closed down below that trend line. So I went short there, took a little bit of profit. Let's see, was there more opportunity in here? Before the break was over, there wasn't a ton more opportunity in here. It doesn't look like I tried to take anything in here. I didn't even draw any trend lines. Since the break, though, you know, right in here, right now, what we would look for is a close below that trend line. Okay? While I've been talking, right there, the close below that one. All right? Now, this may look a little simplistic to everybody, and it's really not that difficult, but if you have our indicator set and you're watching price approach the trend line, I mean, approach the BBC, there's two ways to trade it. One is it hits the BBC and bounces off it with divergence, and the other is there's so much momentum in the market that it doesn't make it to the BBC, and it closes down below these trend lines that you see as it's approaching the BBC. Okay? It's great to have divergence with that because that gives you some measure of what to expect out of the trade. Because when you have divergence like this, you know, normally if the cycle's headed up like this, I wouldn't take the bounce off the BBC like this one. I wouldn't take the entry right here. I'd wait for the confirmation below the trend line. Now, what you expect when you have divergence like this is for this green line to turn down and work its way down into the cycle. Once it gets down to the cycle, you expect it to do it again. All right, like it did in here, down to the cycle, back up, did it again. Down to the cycle, back up, did it again. All right? That's what you expect. Okay? That's it. That's the plan. That's all there is to it. It's really that simple. All right. So I'm going to wrap up the recap right there. Okay? Showing everybody everything that happens over and over and over. Using a 9 tick on what market, carry? What market would you like to look at? Anyone. Okay. I will do it over here. Use a 9 tick on gold. I have no idea what it's going to look like, but I would bet that it's going to look similar. Now, here, ignore all the yellow arrows and all that stuff. Because 4-tick can be fast for some people might want to look at a different time frame. That's fine. Here's the trend line. Okay, so you would need an up close above that trend line. Right in here would be the up close. All right, so that one drew down from 699.3, it drew down 2 ticks, and it went up it went up 10 ticks to 1700.3. It dropped through here. There would be no trading in here. The next one would be right in here. This is the trend line on the way down. Okay. Now, mind you, on a 9-tick, you would have to have a lot more risk. You know, the way that I do it with the 4-tick range, I double the bar size, or I double the range size with the risk. I have 8 ticks risk on every single trade I put on. Okay? So with this, you'd have to have about 18 ticks of risk. Probably not that much. You could probably get away with like 12, but in this particular case right here, there's the trend line down. You would look for a close above that trend line, or actually with the bullish divergence right here. The bullish divergence right there. Just the up close right here would work. Okay, so the up close was at 1700.2. That drew down to 1699.3, drew down 9 ticks. And, well, you can see from 1700.2 it went up to 1703.7. That's 25 ticks. Okay. And you can see right now what it's doing. You know, without me even showing you, you can see that it's, if we drew the trend line here, we'll say, right there, after everything crossed down below, you would have sold short right here at 1699.1, and it's still going down from 1699.1. Okay? So I think what you were probably trying to get at there, Gary, was you just wanted to see it on a larger time frame than the 4-tick range, right? You're not going to get as many trades. You're going to have more risk. But then you get bigger targets, too. Okay? It's really just that simple. See, now the actual setup here on the 4-tick range would have had you short in here at 97.8, where the one that we just looked at on the... Well, it would have had several shorts in here. You would have had one over here, one over here, and one over here. 99.8 was the one we were just looking at, right? It would have been about 7. I got to redraw this because this was the one we drew on the 9 tick. So I would have to draw that from the bottom. It would be up like that. The down close is right there. It'd be 1700. So it would be off by just 2 ticks on that first entry. But there you have it. Okay? Yeah, absolutely, you can. If you were on that, and people trade just like that too, Gary. Now the question was, could you just stay short below the black line? Yes, you can. You know, if you had a reason to get short over here, we'll say, you could just trail your stop behind the black line right here. You know, you could trail it behind the MA1. You could trail it behind the black line. You can look down here, which is what I mentioned a few minutes ago. You know, when you have divergence, you expect it, the green line to turn and go down into the cycle. Once it hits the cycle, you expect it to bounce off the cycle and come back down, like it did here. This time it goes through it, though. But pulled back down, went all the way up to it. Then this time when it pulled back down, it dropped through the BBC, so it changed directions. Okay? Now, right here, the way that this is coming together, not knowing where the bottom of this is going to be, you can draw the trend line like that for right now. If it continues moving up, then that would be the bottom, okay? That would be the bottom of this bar, and you would have this as your trend line. You're getting some bearish divergence right here. When I say bearish divergence, I mean the cycle is heading down and this green line is heading up. So you're getting some bearish divergence right there. So you could take, if this bar closes up, you need this bar to close up, or... You know, somewhere above the low of the prior bar. so I can draw this trend line. Then you can determine what to do from there. You can draw a trend line if you have two bars. Okay. So that's pretty much it. On the 4-tick range, if we jump over to the 4-tick range, it's probably heading toward the BBC right here. Yep, it is right there. Okay, but we don't have any divergence. So the trend line over here would be like this. Okay. So you need to close down below that trend line on the 4-tick range. If we jump back to the 9-tick range, it's still working. Okay. So it's pretty straightforward. Same stuff. And, you know, I like the range bars myself. But you can do it on other time frames, other stuff. You know, other stuff meaning other markets. You know, this, the NQ one that I pointed out a little while ago, it was a short down below this trend line. Look at what it's done. It's dropped all the way down there, and there was another one right there. The crude oil one that I pointed out a little while ago, I said a close below that trend line. The close was right there at 86.56. It dropped all the way down to 86.32 for a $240 contract. Okay. This is the natural gas again. All right. Right in here, the close below this trend line. Dropped all the way down here. I was just about to draw another trend line right here. But the same thing over and over and over. You can use range bars on all index futures, Karen, and all futures in general that you have. You know, if you have DT Pro, you can use it on any chart. On any chart. You can use it on options. You can use it on equities. You can use it on whatever you want. Anything that you can chart. I use the same range on all of them just to keep it simple, but you don't have to. Okay. For me, it's, you know, when I'm answering questions from 100 people and I'm trading 8 different markets and all that, it's the simpler I can keep it, the better. So that's, you know, I think that's a benefit to everyone, because if I have to keep it that simple, then it should be, you know, that simple for everyone else. All right, I've been rambling on here, guys. I'm gonna stop the recording. If anybody wants to become a partner and get into the partners meeting tonight, send an email to support@cfrn.net with partner info in the subject line or something, and I'll send off the information to you. If you're on the free trial and you want to become a partner, get into that partners meeting, you should have the stuff in your inbox. If you don't, again, send me an email. And if you haven't taken the free trial, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Okay.
All right, Michael. Thank you very much.
All right. That's it.
All right, guys. We're going to head out to Vegas one last time, 9 p.m. Eastern. Partners, see you there for the partners meeting. If you have questions, if you have something specific you want us to cover, shoot an email with the detailed question, because we might want to bring together some charts so that it'll be easier to answer the question. Of course, we take questions live during the partners meeting. But go ahead and get your thinking cap on now, all right, so that tonight we can move at a brisk pace and hopefully be done in a couple hours. Okay? Sometimes it drags out to 3, and there's been the rare occasion where we got done in an hour and a half, but we're aiming for 2, so we'll be there, and we will stick around until every question is answered. That's our commitment to you, but we do want to use our time as judiciously as possible. So if you have questions, you want to send them ahead of time, that will be great. And for those whose free trial is about to abruptly end, check your inbox or send an email to support@cfrn.net. We'll get all the paperwork over to you so that you too can be a part of the partners meeting. All right, don't touch your radio dial. We'll be right back with Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com and Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310. And we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Dwayne.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And good morning, everyone. Good morning, Michael. And I don't know if Robin's here with us today, but good morning, Robin, if you are with us today.
Good morning,
yes,
Robin.
Good morning. It's a great day in Las Vegas.
All right.
David, Robin. All right.
Well, they're up on Capitol Hill. They're falling all over themselves trying to solve this dilemma. Ben Bernanke is going to buy some more stuff. He's given us a target. He's tied it to the unemployment rate, so we have some guidance and direction going forward. But the bottom line, guys, is they're not going to resolve this thing before the end of the year. It gives everybody something to talk about, but it's in everyone's best interest, except, of course, taxpayers, for them to wait until after the beginning of the new year, because then they've all honored the Grover Norquist pledge. Interest rates went up, taxes went up without them approving it. And in January, after their extended holiday break, they can return to the negotiating table with every intention of actually putting a deal together. So that's when we'll see the deal. We won't see it before then. The president's just put his foot down. He says, I'm not going to budge. And the GOP has said they're not going to budge. So now we just have to figure out how we're going to deal with it, because we know what's coming. Accept it. Figure it out. Work it into your day planner, into your life planner. Download the app. There's probably an app, how to deal with the fiscal cliff. And get ready.
It just amazes me. You know, who would have guessed we would not make it? It was like, please, we should have. I'm surprised they didn't have a. They probably have a bet in Vegas, don't they, on this?
There's got to be somebody in Vegas that's taking bets on
absolutely
the Grover Norquist and the fiscal cliff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to call the Hilton and just say I'd like to place a bet on the fiscal cliff.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on, please. Let me put you right through. It's got to be something like that.
It has to be. Has to be. We bet on everything.
Everything's up for grabs. Everything's up for betting here. Humanity wants to place a bet. So.
Oh, it's so sad. It is so sad. It's so sad that he just cannot negotiate himself out of a paper bag.
That's true. This is very much about negotiation. This is very much about the skill of dealing with two opposing parties and having them come to agreement. He's not doing and doesn't have any interest in doing that.
Nope.
He has an interest in just defending his particular position.
Right.
There's no middle ground. This is why, and for people, people have said to me before, I'm surprised to hear you say, and I'm not super political. I've gotten more political since being on the program and the whole business with this particular administration. But people have said to me, I'm surprised that you say things like, you enjoyed Bill Clinton's presidency. But if you now take a look at Bill Clinton's, go back and take a look at Bill Clinton's second term, when he was asked and by the American public to get more of the government business done, because there was very much a similar situation where things were not getting done. And Bill Clinton, who is a really consummate bargain and deal maker kind of a guy, put it to work, and look how much business got done in his second term. He went in there and he, in spite of his own views, he got both parties to come together and lots and lots and lots of business got done. That is now, take that, think of that, and look at what we have now. We have a guy who is, even if he had the skills
which I don't think he does. What his skill is to look good in front of a camera and to smile and to have the energy and the charisma that, because we've talked about this, charisma wins, and he has charisma in spades. He's not dumb, but he has a very powerful vision for what he wants America to look like, which is very European and very socialist and very and so on and so on and so on. We've been through all that. That's who's in office. So, but what he doesn't have is the skill set. And you can really see now, for those of you who might have asked the question, why are you interested? You know, why would you say Bill Clinton's a, because go take a look at how much business got done in government because Bill Clinton was able and did, in fact, negotiate. This guy is not negotiating. He's essentially taking a position, and you, it's his way or the highway.
And in a roundabout way, this is a also a dilemma for a trader that psychologically that – has the need to hold on to be right.
Right.
And that's this when your ego kicks in, and that's when you hold on, and you watch things go in the reverse direction, and you have this burning desire to be right. And you're going to wait and wait and wait and wait till the thing turns down, and you lose so much money, you finally get out of the trade. It's like, you know, this is what what's exactly happening. He's holding on, till things get so bad that something will break and he'll have to make a decision. So this is a lesson to be learned, and it is the same thing in trading. Let go of your ego, and it is what it is. The market is what it is, and trade your trade, and do not have the burning desire to be right.
Right. Have the burning desire to understand the market well enough to know what a high probability trading situation looks like when it presents itself, and then trade it like you were wrong.
Right.
And you'll be fine. So that combination is deadly good.
I knew you'd put a good spin on it.
Trade it like you're wrong,
right,
and you'll be
like
just fine. After you do all the work to make sure you're right, trade it like you're wrong, because then you'll do very well with it, and in the end, you'll learn how to trade correctly. Because, again, it goes back, and I've said this many times, I've picked up a bunch of bad ideas about reading about other traders and their exploits and their big risks and their stuff like that. And something inside of me that resonated with, and I took on that persona or that desire to be in that that kind of person. And all this is pure imitation. I'm telling you, you meaning anybody, that you would be surprised at how much of your daily life, including your beliefs and other things, are often just an act of imitation that you later assumed, after you imitated, you then later assumed it was yours. You've, in a sense, identified with it, and now you call it yours, and you continue on doing it. And it covers all kinds of grounds in life. And that's why, again, it's very important to, you know, trader, know thyself. Learn more about, watch yourself, watch your mind, watch your thoughts. Spend time doing that a little bit every day. Can't hurt you. And you'll learn more and more about, because what happens is these things just bubble up inside of you on their own, and you get to see what's really there, as opposed to joining in with those feelings and those ideas and, you know, expressing those outwardly to somebody else. You'll find that many, many things that we all have grabbed onto in many cases were merely imitations of other things we saw. And I did this in trading. I wanted to, without realizing it, I liked the idea. Something resonated in me with the idea, oh, you take big risks and then you potentially get big rewards, and afterwards you have the party that you took the big risk, and look, now everything's great. And something about all that sort of resonated with me. I'm not verbalizing it the best way, but, and that stuck in me, and that was dictating to me how to trade, because I had never investigated what my own, the source of my movements and thoughts were coming from. I wasn't investigating that. Mm-hmm. I was just replicating them outwardly in just terrible trading.
Yeah.
Because that's what I would do. You know about this, Robin. I mean, this is your field.
Yeah. There was one time in the trading room where I sat there, And I constantly got hooked when the guys called out trades in the room. There's Microsoft's running. And, of course, I would run in there and take the trade, and it would reverse and go back on me because they were selling back to me. So it was this constant. And I'd get hooked every single time. And then I was sitting next to this one guy who was a chef who was trading during the day and being a chef at night in a restaurant. And I said, I just can't seem to get in the right direction. Every time I go one way, it goes the other way. He says, well, then do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and my brain went like, it like fizzled on me. And I went, oh, God, do the opposite. Because my feeling was to go in the direction of where the excitement was. And mm-hmm. so I tried it. And I started to reverse. Every time I heard somebody yelling out a call, I would wait I'd pull it up, wait a split second, and I'd short it. And I'd do the opposite. And I started making money all the time. Mm-hmm. And but that one transition in my mind to let go of the way I felt and my intuition and to do totally the opposite, that was mm-hmm. the challenge.
Yeah.
That was the challenge.
Yeah, no doubt. And listen, I think everybody that's listening to the program and every trader, everybody who's in any field, there is a natural, I believe, a natural intelligence
uh-huh.
that we all have that goes beyond and deeper, I should say, than the intelligence that you accumulate through day-to-day living, the intelligence of knowing how to drive your car and how to get to the store and how to compare prices and even the intelligence that you use in your business. There is an intelligence that's deeper than that mere mechanical type of intelligence. And I'm not talking about vague words like intuition and so on, although intuition is a perfectly good word that describes a perfectly good condition. What I'm really talking about is that if you can get to the point where you're not being dictated to by mm-hmm. all of the imitation every one of us has picked up. Don't deny it. It's absolutely true for everybody. Mm-hmm. We've picked up, we're imitating, we're going through all these things. If you can shut some of that off and see through it. That means you don't have to get into a fight with it. You actually see it, and the seeing of it helps have it lose its grip on you. Then this already existing intelligence can come out and begin to express itself through you. You can only believe that, though, actually believe it, not in faith, but I mean believe it because you know it to be the case, if you go through the steps of watching yourself and seeing the various parts in you playing out. Give yourself 10 minutes a day and so on to sit down quietly and turn the phones off and get away from the computer and whatnot. And for some people, and for me included, it can be very uncomfortable to do it sometimes. But let yourself, use yourself, become the object of your own attention, not as a judger, just to watch, just out of interest. What is this machinery doing? What's coming out of this? And you'll get to be more familiar with the kinds of thinking and odd little ideas and other things that pop through your mind. All kinds of ideas will flow through your mind. Let them go. Just let them see them. But once you start to see that and they start to lose their grip, you will know from what I'm telling you, which is that there really is another intelligence that can act, which is much broader and deeper than mere mental connection making. The kind that we do when we're taking a test or whatever. This is more of a life intelligence, an intelligence that gives you a different kind of perspective. Practice that. It can be very helpful in trading. It can be very helpful in, not necessarily that intelligence is going to tell you to go long or short, but that intelligence is going to keep you out of trouble because you're not being dictated to by imitation that we've all accumulated along the way. The imitation is not doing you any, it's imitation crab is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the real thing. And so you have to, everyone, all of us gets to a point in our life at some point where we're going to say, I need to find something more real from myself than what I'm expressing now. This is not doing it for me. And people, there's a homing call, so to speak, that, you know, you feel like you want to become more real, not just to other people, but for yourself. You know, to stop just globbing on to everything that's thrown your way and picking up little bits and pieces and building a mountain of trouble in front of yourself. This intelligence is much brighter than the mountain of trouble which we've accumulated through imitation. And so, that's something that I encourage people to do. I'm not trying to be a trading coach, but in terms of what has helped me, I had to go through a big thing about my own imitation of other traders, my own imitation of other things that I've read in books. And that's why many times on the program I've said to people with a certain amount of fierceness in it, you know, to burn the books, stop reading that stuff, because it's going to do potentially to you what it did to me, which is, you know, cost me lots and lots of years of being dictated to by imitation. And if you want to live an imitation life, you can go right ahead and do it. How's that working out for you?
Yeah, and plus you don't really tap into your own strengths that
right.
way.
Exactly.
You know, you just are missing out on, you know, what your intelligence is and what you bring to the table. And sometimes you bring to the table more than a lot of these people do.
I guarantee it.
Yeah.
If a person was willing to go further into this and break away, take a break from the imitation life, they would find that their own that this natural intelligence that is there, that can and will surface, will give you a completely new type of feeling towards others and towards yourself and so on. And it's very difficult to put into words, but you have to want to do it. And, you know, you can't force people into this. But it has helped me in many, many ways. I wish I could say them all, but that's why I always encourage people to spend some time in this, rather than just being running, always trying to get the next thing and the next thing to glob onto the big clump of clay that we've built, that we call ourselves, you know, out of all these different bits and pieces. At some point, that's going to have to come down, and something more real is going to have to take its place.
And isn't that how really trading strategies evolve, by somebody, you know, getting the basic stuff, but really going in there and putting their own spin on it.
Sure,
and
exactly.
Finding the combination that's even better.
Here's 10 guys. You give them all the same trading information, and let's say two guys out of the 10 can do something really good with it. Well, what's the difference between those two guys
right.
and the other? They all have the same tools.
Right.
So there is a difference, and that's I'm telling you that some of the things we're talking about here are those differences. And skill, of course, plays its part in the markets, and experience, and so on. So,
well, that's why I always kind of repeat that, you know, you and only you are responsible for your trading. I don't care what you've read or what you've done or who's told you what to do what. You need to know why things are happening, why they're doing it, and why I am a real big proponent of people asking as many questions as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because getting on the same page as your instructor, whoever that may be, is important to understand their strategy, but more importantly, to take it to the next step that David's saying is really to put your own spin on it and dig a little bit more, dig
yes.
in a particular direction, and see if there's something else that you can't add to that would give you more certainty when you place that trade.
Right. Right. No, that's well said. That's exactly right. So, anyway, so it's very interesting. It is a journey. It is a trip that we take, and there is quite a bit of self-discovery. And I want to say, if you think this has to do just with trading, it's everything. Anybody who achieves anything great goes through these processes, and they come from a deeper place where they're more connected, and their work is more persistently good, and it's not so haphazard, and so on. And I know the people to come up, well, I just want to make a couple $100 or whatever. Yeah, I know, and you can do that, but in order to be consistent at this, I really think you're going to have to know yourself better and turn off these other voices that are dictating to you, really, for the most part, without you being aware right now, perhaps, that there's any dictating going on at all. You think it's you, but it really is the imitation you that we've picked up along the way. And that doesn't mean you have to split yourself into 100 pieces and worry that there's these. All you have to do is watch. Just become more alert to have some inner vision and watch while you're watching outside in the world. That's why about a year or so ago I told the story about the man in Cameraville, who everyone in Cameraville had a camera, and they're taking pictures all day long, and all day long they're looking through their camera, looking out at the world, and the man has the camera, and one day he's changing the film, and he's had the camera for 50 years, and he suddenly realizes, wow, there's a here's a switch on this camera I've never seen before. He flips the switch, and now when he looks through the camera, he can simultaneously see what's out there, but he also can see himself as the viewer through the camera, something he had never seen before. It was now a two-way camera as opposed to a one-way camera, which before he could just see out. Now he could see the seeing, the seer, as he was seeing what was out there as well, that little switch. And that changed everything for him. And so that's what we're talking about, is learn to keep the think of the camera and look out at the world, and also remember that you are a part of that and see yourself looking as well. It's hard to put into words, but it's very absolutely doable by anybody. And what that does is get you more familiar. You're not there to dictate to yourself how you should be thinking. You're there to see how and what you are thinking and make no comment about it. this one, the top, Delta. Yeah. So anyway, I had to answer a very important question there about lunch. Those are very important questions. Anyway, so
I can't believe you have a question about lunch. You only go to one restaurant.
Well, somebody just wandered in here and put a little piece of paper down in front of me and asked me something about lunch. And these are
Do you want to go to sushi again?
No, these are executive decisions that have to be made by important people. So anyway, it's like, you know, here's another, and then we'll get on to markets. Here's another example. If you have an office, and let's say a person goes into, you know, his, and he wants to lay his office out, what you're going to do is you're going to say to yourself, well, what have I seen in offices that I like? And you're going to go, or you're going to flip through a magazine or whatever, and you're going to lay it out that way. You're not laying out your office the way you really want it. You're laying out an office or your living room, whatever, the way that you've picked up over time. There may be perfectly legitimate ways that that happen to look like someone else's office, but that happens to really work for you. As an example, because I have an office here and I've done it myself in my own office. So are you going to go out and try to look a certain way because you've picked that up, or are you going to go out and do it the way that really has a connection with you? Or same thing true with your home, or with, you know, how you deal with your relationships and so on. You know, we've picked up ideas about how we're supposed to do this and do that. Well, I'm telling you, there's something more intelligent than merely repeating, mimicking, parroting, copying some other person's work or idea in you living your day-to-day life. There's something deeper, and if you have the desire to look for it, it's not very far away, but it just seems like it's far away because we've accumulated all this stuff. So I won't hammer it anymore, but it's very valuable to watch your own mind. There's no payoff, there's no paycheck, there's nothing in it for you except that you learn what isn't really you. That's all.
I think there's tons in it for them.
Yes,
I
mean, of course. Yeah, I'm really sort of saying it in a funny way.
Yeah, tons and tons of confidence and certainty and really understanding who you are and using your mind. You know,
yeah.
Because that's the main thing, is that you're using your mind. Your mind is a very, very powerful thing. And it's amazing, even when I do some coaching, I have something happen to me, and this has to be what you're describing, which I'll be talking to somebody and I'll be on a really connected with them. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a concept comes out of my head. I don't even know where it comes from. It just comes out. And it's like,
yeah.
Oh, that was great. Where did that come from?
Oh,
I didn't
exactly.
learn from anybody. It just came flowing out.
Mm-hmm.
And I always am in shock when that happens, because I said, oh, I hope I taped that one, because
that was really
good.
Where
did that
right.
come from?
Right. That goes back to the thing about teachers learn while they're teaching, because that thing that you just said is what happens to teachers. They find themselves reaching for the stars in trying to explain something, and in that reaching, they discover something right then and there, right as they're teaching.
Yeah.
And so
absolutely.
That's why I've always said that, you know, the statement that people go off, you know, people who can do, people who can't do it, teach, is such an ignorant ignorance really has the only infinity in the whole world is ignorance. It can just go on forever. You know, try teaching something to somebody and you'll find out that you'll see that intelligence comes to work, because you're reaching and it comes to you, and you find it, and suddenly the whole concept gets delivered like a package right in your mind, like you said, and there it is, and you're thinking, where did that come from? How did I do that?
One of the ways that I learned to trade in the beginning, when I really wasn't getting it, I mean, I just was not getting it, and I was working on they had a 1 week course that they taught, and I was teaching 1 hour psychology during that course, and I just, after 3 months, I was still lost, and I said to them, can you do a manual? And he says, oh, we don't have time. I said, how about I'll do the manual for you? Because I figured if I had to document everything, I'd have to learn it. And so I did. I ended up documenting it, and I learned so much just from documenting it. I knew every nitpick thing. My first manual was 35 pages, and by the time I left the firm, it was 135 pages, and it was known as the best training on Wall Street at the time. And it was powerful because every little tiny thing that I had to write down and learn to explain to somebody else, I got. And it was invaluable. It was just invaluable how much I learned. And that's how I got the feel for the tape, because I'd have to watch the tape the whole time. So that's where that one skill of reading the tape, and I can't trade without time and sales. I feel like my arm's cut off if I can't trade with time and sales, because since that time.
Yeah. No, I went through that too. And then we'll get to markets or whatever Duane wants. I just want to say, for many years I traded with two screens, and one of them just simply had written numbers on it, some kind of a grid or something that was from the platform company, in my case CQG. And I got so used to seeing that and having my eye click over to that back and forth throughout the day that when I finally reduced and went down to one screen, for me, this just, it's usable enough, one screen, that it really was a shock, that period of time where you're really looking for that number and you feel a little bit like, wow, I don't think I can do this without those numbers there, you know. Anyway, so if you want, Duane, we can move on into the various markets. We do have volatility today. We do have movement. So there's probably something interesting to chat about here with the S&Ps and so on. Let's see. For starters, you know, we had the Fed announcement, or whatever we really want to call it, from yesterday. And this is now, the markets had a what people might say is a negative response to this. And we've had a good movement down today. They're about, let me check where we are right now. In our work, we have 14.18/16. I'm seeing on the screen here that Duane has a similar number down here, 14.17/16. These levels are important in today's session. The market is likely going to have a reaction off of these. We're not going to take any action just yet. I want to let the market show a little bit more confirmation here, because the break of the 14.23 level was important this morning. That's just an old low that the market had been testing, and they broke that. That is important. The test that we're going through now at the 18/16 level, I believe, is important as well, and will likely result in some kind of a rally up. So I would like to let at least this hour close, let them continue working here, just as a marker point, just to say, hey, we got through that, and then we'll talk about what to do. Longer term, or even moderate term, we've talked about the week of December 17th, which is next week, being the on-time week for a top in the market. It's possible that top came 1 week early with this decline on the week of December 10th, and this means that it's going to be difficult for the week to close above that 14.32 level. This week we're about 12 points below that now. So if we close below that 32 level, that's going to be the earliest indication that the 1 week early top is in. That will be the earliest confirmation in a broad sense. And then we would expect, like we've been talking about, that normally the week of December 17th in this particular case 1 week early, would start a multi-week sideways to lower movement. So the news and the other factors that have come in, they're matching up with the technicals. It occurred on the 1 week early. We'll see how the week closes. And we may actually have a roadmap based upon this as well for those of you who might want to consider putting a roadmap type of trade, meaning an overnight multi-day position on. So we'll talk about that more. And then nothing new to add to the longer term, although it's not a forecast. We think the market's in a very good position longer term for higher prices, in spite of all the moving back and forth and the more localized news and so on, that the market would move higher into next year. We're talking about the S&P 500 primarily, and the markets that trade near that market, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and so on. But really, this is for the S&P more than those markets, because sometimes those other markets can move differently than the S&P. So particularly, as an example, the NASDAQ. So either way, so that's our outlook. We think we're at a very critical juncture on the upside for the S&P. One thing I was going to mention is that you said something, Robin, that is also very true, and it has to do with people taking responsibility for their trades and so on. And we talk to a lot of people. I know Dwayne and Michael talk to a lot of people. When people get more down the road in trading, you know, they've been around it for a long time, they may be very upset with a condition that has occurred in the market. They may be very upset with having to been stopped out and so on. But nicely absent from that is that many people will go through those bad emotions, but they're not mad at a person. They're not blaming another person, even if they took a trade based off of that. Maybe somebody else's system, as an example, or a call, maybe a call that we've made. They trade it as best as they can. If it doesn't work out, or if they trade it incorrectly, maybe the trade does work out and they trade it poorly, they may be very upset. But there's a difference between being angry and blaming and simply angry.
Mm-hmm.
Blame is an entirely separate subject, and it has a whole different energy to it. So I've noticed that I've seen this many times when you said that flashed through my head that, you know, we've seen this many times that I've seen it. With the more experienced traders, they can call up spitting mad about a trade that they took wherever they got it, whether it was their own work or somebody else's, but they're not blaming anybody. They're just upset that it didn't work out,
yeah,
and maybe,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And
that
you got to give that to them. Hey, you can, that's fine.
Yeah.
But as opposed to the blame thing, where you're always somehow got to find somebody has to be responsible other than starstruck you. It always has to be somebody else. Even if you don't verbalize it in the back of your mind, see if that's true, there's always somebody to blame. And that is a worthless life to lead, the
right
life of always finding somebody else to blame for something. And maybe there's just nobody to blame. Maybe it's just you. You're more than right to be angry about something. But it is interesting that the higher level guys that I deal with, they're upset about a trade or they're upset about something that went wrong, but they're not blaming people. See if you notice the difference.
They're not a victim.
Right.
And they take responsibility. There's the difference. You know, if you take responsibility and it's your thing, you go, oh, okay, all right, what do I got to do versus, oh, you know, this person gave me this wrong thing and I took it because they told me to and
right,
blah, blah, blah. That's a person who's, you know, they're a victim. That's why you have to know yourself what's
that's right
going on.
That's right. So it's interesting. I've seen this so many times. And then the other people that call up that will, you know, say the other people that are looking for somebody to blame, you have to be your own man. You have to trade by your
right
own light. If you have something that you're using, whether it's a mechanical system or somebody else's system, trade it as best as you can. Learn the nuances of it, et cetera, and see the difference between blaming others, because
right
you're not going to get very high on Trader's Mountain blaming other people. Period. I wish I had a T-shirt that said that, you know, or a bumper sticker.
I like that Trader's Mountain thing. I like that one. I like that one.
Reminds
me. I'm writing down all the T-shirts, you know. I'm going to give them to you for Christmas.
I'll wear them. I'll wear them. I'll look just as freaky as the people, you know, in Walmart. Okay.
We better get to the markets before Dwayne gets a whole slew of stuff in his mail.
Box. Okay, so that's basically it on the S&P. So we're moving down here. I do like the idea of watching this 18/16 level for the market here. Give them some time down here, but I think that would be the potential for another trade in today's session. So today's low so far has been 17.75. Let's watch that a little bit. We'll move on through a few of these other markets and see where we end up in a few minutes when we come back to the S&P. Real quick, with regard to gold, which we always go to next, gold had a nice sell-off from yesterday, good, sharp sell-off into today. I think if this is going to continue, it won't go much further than tomorrow, which is December 14th. So what we would like to see, we would like to see the market, as you may recall, back on December 3rd and December 4th, we were saying that we would like to see the market come down and touch 1687, 1686 into the December 5th daily reflected wave bottom for December 5th. And it did do that, and it tested those levels. Those levels remain important. We've not reached them yet today. 1690.7 is the low of the gold market in the March contract. Remember, we're now trading in March in gold. So we want to see into tomorrow that 1686, 1687 hold if what we want to do is be long. If you're looking to be long in gold, we want to see these levels continue to hold. So nothing wrong with what they did today. But we would like to see 1686 and 87, the original natural level, be tested and hold. And we're just going to let them cook throughout the day here. We'll talk about this into tomorrow. I don't know if you have anything you want to throw in on gold or the S&P, Dwayne.
On the S&P, the numbers you're using, are they for the new contract?
No, thank you. They're actually still in the December because we had a ton of volume, not a ton, but plenty still. We're going to roll into the March starting tomorrow morning. So, right, our support and resistance and everything else will be in the March.
Okay.
So today is into December.
Dan wanted to know if you and Robin, I have a question for Robin and David. Is there such a thing as a victim, and can it be defined?
Well, Robin, if you'd like question. To...
Yeah. I started writing a book, 101 Ways to Know If You're a Victim and How Never to Be One Again, when I was doing the prison work.
Oh.
But I never put it out. So, yes, there are many ways to tell if you're a victim. One, you are not in control of anything, and you are not responsible. Somebody else is. So, as an example, your happiness is defined by the person in your life. And if you're not happy, it's because they're making you unhappy. In your job, if your boss does something and you're not happy in your job, it's because of him or another coworker. It's not you. So the key thing is that you are not responsible. Everybody else is. That's the big picture. There are many, many more things that will define a victim, but that's, for me, that's what I saw when I was in prison, because there was a slew of victims. And until you take responsibility for your actions, until you take responsibility for your solutions, everybody else will control your life and you will never find happiness. Victims have a tendency never to be happy because their whole happiness is in the hands of somebody else. So they never find happiness. And I will share with you very honestly that I didn't know that I was a victim until I was in my early 40s and started doing this work. And I complained about everything. I'm a perfectionist, so I have a tendency to look for how to make things better all the time anyway. That's just my nature. But I would blame my unhappiness or not being happy in a situation on somebody else. Oh, they did something wrong. Oh, they could have done this better. Oh, and I never enjoyed the moment. I was a very unhappy person. I'm totally the opposite right now. And I like working with victims because when you come into the light, so to speak, and you are no longer a victim and you take responsibility for your life, your whole life changes. And it was one of the reasons why I got into this work, because I said, people have to get this. People have to enjoy their life. They're on Earth for this length of time, whatever that is, and they need to enjoy their life. And to go around as a victim all the time, you will never find happiness. Never, 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 never. That's absolutely the truth. And I lived, 42 years that way and couldn't understand why I couldn't find happiness. And that was the reason. I was a victim all the time. So, Take responsibility. That's the key thing. You and only you are responsible for your actions, and you have the ability to shift that whenever you choose. It is your choice.
Mm-hmm. Did he ask, Dwayne, is there such thing as a victim, really? Is he really asking a sort of philosophical question, or did she answer? That was beautifully answered, too, by the way.
Word for word, I have a question for Robin and David. Is there such a thing as a victim, and can it be defined?
Okay.
That was the
I think she did it.
Question.
I think Robin defined it very much. External events dictate everything to you, and it's always causing you grief. You're a victim. There's always something outside of you that's causing you to feel bad, outside of you that's causing you to feel good, outside of you that's causing you to... It's always outside. There's an external consideration that takes place prior to any other consideration. It's always something else, and that's the blame, and that's the... Have you ever known somebody who, and then we'll get right back to the markets, I promise, ever know anybody who, when they get maybe this is you, it's been me, that when you get really mad, you make everybody else miserable, and then when you're over it, you go back to those people, and since you're feeling better, you're kind of saying to them, hey, you can feel better now because I do. See, you can feel happy now because I'm feeling better now, so now you can feel better.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. Hey, gosh, I'm over it. I'm feeling better. Hey, honey, yeah, I'm feeling better. So go ahead and feel better now. Okay? And The reason you're saying that is because we all know that other people externally consider, meaning that they think of others often before themselves. That sounds like a nice thing, but in living your daily life in terms of victimhood, it is victimhood itself. It's you putting other people and other considerations ahead of what's really right for you. And many people who have that weakness will even turn it into something that looks like something even religious, as an example, like that they're doing for others, etc. Mm-hmm. What they're really doing is just playing out their own victimhood and calling it something else.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So you have to be very careful. The mind's very tricky. Go ahead.
If I may, let me share an example that I experienced on the tennis court, which was I could tell she was a victim immediately. We came onto the courts, and typically we take like 10 minutes to warm up. Well, we had been warming up before she arrived. She arrived a little bit late. So when she came and we were all warmed up, she says, we can start playing. I said, no, you can warm up. We'll warm up with you. And so we played the game and we won. And she says, well, you didn't give me any time to warm up. I said, we asked you if you wanted to warm up. No, you put so much pressure on me that I couldn't warm up. I said, no, it was your choice to choose not to warm up.
Right.
Now, that's a victim. That's how a victim would react in the moment. They weren't responsible. I forced her to play, yet we asked her very graciously. We said, we'll take the time to let you warm up. And she chose not to. And she says, well, I felt really pressured. I said, well, then that was your choice to feel pressured. See, a victim will not take responsibility. So it was my fault that she didn't warm up. It was my fault that she lost the game. And right. That's a very typical victim response. And I could tell immediately she was the victim. And
right.
And when you're in that situation, you can't win because they're going to always blame you for everything. And so there's no way that you can communicate with them because, it's your fault anyway. And then you just go, okay, yeah, it's my fault. You're right. I twisted your arm and held you down and didn't let you practice.
Right.
You're right.
But listen, if you do see the victim in you come out, and then we'll get right to the markets, if you do see it come out in you, don't watch the other voice that comes up and says, oh, don't look over here. Don't let yourself catch yourself being a victim because they said it's bad. No, it's good to catch yourself being a victim because that light
yeah.
breaks its hold on you.
Right.
So don't be afraid to catch yourself being the victim. We all do it. We all have it in us. It's a very natural thing that comes. It's natural in the worst use of that word. And, you know, over time, though, as you begin to watch and see yourself actually playing the victim and doing all the things we're talking about, it helps you release yourself, and the natural intelligence can start to operate. Once you have that experience, you'll be a changed person because you know there's something better and deeper working in you day to day, moment by moment, that you are actually allowing to be covered up by all this nonsense that we've accumulated, including victimhood. Victimhood is a game that somebody's playing, and in many cases they don't even know they're playing it. And it's very difficult to communicate to those people because they've gone so far over to the victimhood side they can't even see it as victimhood anymore. So you can't get through to people you can't get through to, but the real issue is what about you? You know, because that's what we're talking about here. So anyway, we'll move on from the gold market, which we want to see it stay above the thing.
Wait, one quick thing. A way to stop yourself from, if you catch yourself being a victim, is to ask, am I taking responsibility?
That's good.
And if you do that in the moment and you're not taking responsibility for your actions, then you are being a victim, and you can turn it right then and there. Mm.
I like that.
Solutions.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay,
So we'll move on from gold. No problem. We'll move on from gold. Let's see. In gold, in the March contract, we're talking about 1687, 1686. So keep that in mind. They haven't reached that yet today, but I want to see them continue to stay above that into tomorrow, and we'll talk about it into tomorrow. We don't really have much to say. I don't have anything to say about Facebook. But Facebook did and is remaining in a very strong position. We don't trade in Facebook. We haven't traded it at all. This is the stock Facebook. But Facebook had some natural things that they needed to do from December 3rd, which was an important date in a number of markets. And the manner in which they handled that indicates that Facebook, even now, is in a very strong position, with higher prices likely. So it'll be interesting to watch how this stock plays out against previous movement and so on. I wouldn't be surprised to see the stock, this isn't a forecast, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the stock attempting $31, you know, a couple bucks higher than where we are over some time here. Would not be surprised. So I don't have any indications or anything. Dwayne, is there anything you have to throw in on Facebook or...
No, I haven't seen any important news out of late regarding it, and we've been rolling sideways for 2 weeks roughly. What we did is this gap right here, guys, as you can see if you look left, we filled in that gap. Now go straight across the chart, and after filling in that gap, we've just rolled sideways. Today, we're up 2%. Volume is 57 million shares. So there's some this stock is in so much better position than it was back. You know, we got down, the lows were, how low did we get? 16?
Yeah. Something like that.
At 12. We never got there, and I am glad for every Facebook shareholder that they didn't have to live through that thing going to 12.
$17.55, Dwayne. They got down to $17.55.
All the way back to 28. I mean, that's really closing in on the IPO price, and that's got to make an awful lot of folks feel pretty good. And here's the thing. The fact that it has climbed and been able to hold here, there was a huge infusion of shares into the market, shares that became free trading, shares that most people assumed would get sold, dumped, whatever the case. And with this kind of volume, I'm sure some of them have been sold, but there's been somebody standing there on the bid buying them up. So.
Yeah. No, it's an amazing thing, and I do think they're very much in concert with what you're saying, that they are in a really strong position. Primarily to me because of how they handled this December 3rd sell-off and the whole motion. I would not be surprised to see still much higher prices coming based just on that alone. And we'll keep an eye on it. It's nothing that we're trading. You know, you might say, well, if you think the prices are going higher, how come you're not buying it? You're saying it's you think it's going higher, but why aren't you buying it? Why? How come you don't just take advantage? Because we take advantage of the things that we're most comfortable with. That's how we trade, is we're looking just for the most comfortable. There's so many things going on out there. It's like how people say, pick your battles in life. You know, if you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna get mad at the guy in front of you in the car and you want to, you know, force him over to the side of the road and beat him up because he cut you off, you know, you can pick that battle, but there's probably a better use of that energy. You can let that guy go, right? And so you don't fight everybody who, you know, does a little something in traffic to you. You just let him scoot along. He's got his little thing that he's on to, and you know, and so on. Well, the same thing with the markets, except in reverse. There's a lot of good things that can that you can potentially see that are about to happen, but you might not trade all of them because you want you're trying to reach that setup that is everything that you're looking for as best as you can. So we might be able to say, and it may even work out to be true, hey, here's a stock that's going to do such and such, but we may not trade that stock because other factors may not be in it. I've gotten that question a number of times. You know, you say this, and then you say you're not in it, and that's the case.
And also, you know, I think part of it is that, you know, there are certain expertises within the group, and when I go to look at possibly trading a stock, I like to watch it for a while. And look what's going on. So that's why I'm watching Soda. You know, it's interesting to me. I think it's an innovative product, but I want to watch it for a while. And I like it today. At some point in time, if you'd pull it up, that'd be great. I like it today on a down day, and it's still managing to get a couple cents out of it. So, you know, I think as a group, again, taking responsibility and choosing your own markets, we're giving you, you know, information because we have eyes on many things. And so by putting it out there, you know, it's just something for you to look at, but you have to make your decisions.
Right.
And you have to know what you're trading. And so that's important. So we're getting back to you being responsible.
Mm-hmm. When you're
and
really
asking questions.
Yeah, right. I was just going to say, when you're really in your right mind, if I may say so, it feels really good to take responsibility for your own actions. When you're really not in your right mind, it's a big pain to take responsibility. So by that measure, you know, where do you land? Because when you're in your right mind, you'll very much enjoy taking responsibility. Okay, let's move on. We're talking about the U.S. Treasury bond market yesterday. And
well, one
this
thing,
is
before we go to the bonds,
please.
A lot of questions here on gold. Is it February? Is it March? Folks are clamoring.
I'm sorry. You know what? That was probably my mistake, and it is my mistake. I'm sorry. Let me take responsibility for that. No, man, it's your fault, Dwayne.
All right.
No, it's February. it's February. I meant February. I actually said March for some reason, but I think I was thinking maybe the S&P. It's February gold, and February gold, we're talking about the 1686 and 1687 level.
Okay.
So that's the number. Thank you for pointing that out, too, because I didn't realize I had even said that. Okay, so anything else on that, or is that the whole deal with the gold?
No, that was the only question I saw on gold is there was confusion over the contract month.
Okay,
you know, Elon Musk had a new IPO today, and we'll talk about
it. Yeah, I heard you talking about that earlier.
Solar City.
Yeah, SolarCity, I think, is the company that he was going to have install the chargers or had some connection with his Tesla motors and so on. So that's going to be interesting
they
to see how that...
They install solar panels. That's that's their...
Oh, solar model. Panels. Okay.
SCTY okay. is the symbol. And we've only got
one day
of trading because there's only one candle because today's the IPO.
Okay.
But it's up $4 on the day.
I'm sorry, what was that doing? It's up what?
It's up $4 on the day.
Wow, okay.
Now,
beautiful.
They originally wanted to IPO it between 13 and 15. They reduced that to $8. Elon wasn't crazy about it, but he went along with it. And the fact that they did reduce the IPO price down to $8 has allowed it to post first day gains of $4. Hmm. Had they IPO'd at 15, one might argue that it could potentially be down $2 today. Do you follow my line of thinking here? by pricing it at $8, this looks great. First day out trading up 50%, 49.5%. That's awesome. As opposed to IPOing at 15 and it trades down to 12, so your first day in the market is negative.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to simply do with perception. I mean, no one will ever be able to prove that if they had IPO'd at 15, if they had IPO'd at 15, it might have gone to 18 or 19 or 20. We'll never know because that didn't happen.
Nope. Right.
But this is a good example of how on an IPO, pricing the stock properly is so important. And I think the world learned that from Facebook. They priced their IPO at 100 times earnings.
Yeah.
And and Apple trades at a very successful company, Apple, trades at 15 times earnings. But Facebook comes along and says, well, you know, we're going to value ourselves at 100 times earnings. Because
Wasn't it during IPO time that did happen on a normal practice? You know, in the old days when the IPOs were really coming out, that they were pricing them higher and you would get them shoot up and go crazy. But I think
what you're referring to, Robin, is back when they were IPOing companies that had no earnings.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing.
They had no earnings. They had an idea. They had a concept. They had a whiteboard. They had a couple of smart guys in a room with black rimmed glasses and some pocket protectors, or some really cool T-shirts and flip-flops, and that's all there was, and that's all there ever was. But because this was, you know, hailed as the new economy and the new world, people sank everything they had into the dream, and the dream imploded. Yeah. And so now we're back for round two with a dose of reality, and companies are now required to actually make money. Investors don't just throw money at an idea anymore.
If we could only get that ported over to the government, we'd be in good shape.
Yeah, that's very true. The government
has a different kind of math it works on.
I'll say. I think they're still using the abacus.
All right, so we'll move on. We were going to just talk real briefly about the U.S. Treasury bond market. We talked yesterday that we expected further lows in the market into December 13th, today, December 13th. And we've gotten those lows. They've reached I may have mentioned these numbers, thank you, and in the December contract yesterday, but I have moved over to the March contract for the U.S. Treasury bond. And those numbers, whatever I mentioned, are actually 147.09, which is almost to the tick of what today's low is. What we want to see now, with the bond market having declined, is we want the market to close above 147.09. And if I was going to trade this, I would trade it and use a 147.01. That's about 8 ticks. And remember, we're talking about a multi-day movement, not just for an hourly trade. This would be better for a daily multi-day type deal. But I'd want to see them close daily above the 147.01. So that 8 tick risk would be my risk in a trade on the long side for the United States Treasury bond, 30-year bond, in the March contract. Anybody who has reflected wave knows about both the turn that was occurred on November 22nd and the December 13th turn. So the bottoms. These are two bottoms. These are reflective wave bottoms. So keep that in mind, because this is the Treasury bond market. Many do trade in this market. This is a market that we have traded in. We're not in it right now, but this is something that is big enough that's setting up here that we might want to consider. But those are the levels, and let me repeat them. March contract, 147.09, we want daily closes above it. If I am long from at or near that level, I'm going to use a stop at anywhere at 147.01, daily closes below that or that level. So keep that in mind. We'll talk about this into tomorrow, and this is the March contract. I'm quite certain about that. Let's see, a couple other markets that have moved today. Interesting. Also, Dwayne, we haven't talked about Under Armour a bunch, and it's nothing, no big deal, but this stock has been struggling to stay up, and it's moving below important levels today, down at $48.75. This is UA, So you might want to, if you, those of you who are watching stocks, this is interesting what this stock is doing. We're not in it, but we are watching it just out of interest to see what they're able to do here. So we'll talk about this. This stock may also run on the same cycle for a December 14th, 13th bottom. So we're going to, we'll watch that into tomorrow. Switching from that to the euro is relatively quiet today. This again is the March euro currency. The market had moved up off of a roadmap that had come out on the 7th. This roadmap was given on Messenger Pro. We did mention on the radio program that you could buy it, though, for a substantial advance. And we've moved over 200 pips so far up from, we were out at 128.92 on the low. We've made a high of 131.12. Just for the sake of those of you that might be interested, the final target for this was 131.28, at or near 131.28. And so today the high has been 12. So we've missed that by about 16 ticks, which is about a $200 difference in a multi-$1,000 move so far up. Now, it's interesting because if they're unable to touch 131.28 or come within, I don't know, roughly maybe five ticks of it, then that will imply some short-term weakness here because normally the market would complete that number. And it's a natural level during this time period for this particular roadmap. So we read into that. We use that in as information just in case we had another position to take. If it was on the short side, we'd be utilizing that information. So we'll see what they're able to do over the next day or so. But they haven't done anything wrong yet. But for those of you who watch candlesticks, and I do, I read them. I don't call them by their proper names, but I, through many years of looking at them, I like certain types of setups that have been useful to me. But so far, nothing wrong has happened yet. We have sort of a what would be called doji type of day today. The day's not over yet, though. That's another mistake that would be common that you might find yourself making, which is to name a formation prior to the market closing.
Yep.
Especially prior, like many, many hours prior to. And you go, oh, God, this is a beautiful whatever, you know, cloud cover, harami, you know, whatever it is. And you end up taking action based on that, and then the market later moves and it shifts around, and before you know it, it's nothing like that formation, and now you're stuck in the position. So, Duane, were you going to comment on that, or did you have something?
No, I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah, so that's something you might want to keep an eye on. I've made that mistake.
Whether you're looking at a daily candle or an hourly candle or a one-minute candle, you can jump the gun and go, oh, well, it's going to be this. But it can end up being something entirely different.
Yeah, I've made that mistake so many times, and I just had to learn the lesson. You just have to be very careful not calling it, because right now, if you look at it on the daily chart, you know, well, that there's a beautiful doji, you know, or whatever. But it isn't a beautiful doji. It's midday, and it isn't a doji. You can't call it a doji yet. A doji is a doji when the market closes, and it's in this position. That's what's called a doji.
Or
not halfway through the day.
If you're looking at an hourly chart when the hour closes, or if you're looking at a 15-minute chart, whenever the candle that you're watching closes, then that's speaking to you. It's a graphic representation of investor sentiment during the time frame that you're currently observing. Could be daily, could be weekly, could be hourly, could be 30 minutes. The same thing applies across the board, but you have to wait for it. If you're in a 30-minute on a 30-minute chart, you got to wait for the 30-minute candle to finish and start a new candle, and then you can go, okay, now let me interpret what this just told me. So, yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, I'm going to get some phone calls from somebody because someone's going to call me, and they're going to say, well, you said to wait for the close, and I didn't short it, and the darn thing was a doji. Now, you know, that time it worked out to be a doji, but because it closed. But, you know, just be careful because it's a mistake that – I've made a zillion times because you're anxious to get in and you wanna do something, and that's a whole other subject. Don't be so anxious to be in the market. Just wait for them to show you the stuff, and then take the trades as they come along. trade like real estate investors invest. Look around, check all the things out, check the roads that come to it, check the roads that lead from it, all that stuff, and take your best picks from that rather than being all revved up. And you just can't, if you're like me in the old days, you just can't wait to lose your money. Boy, that's fun. You know, I did that so much. I swear to God, I did that so much. I came up with a funny phrase that I used to tell people, you know, because you, when you're young in this, you just can't wait to tell people that you trade in the stocks or you trade in futures or you, or that you're a trader, and, you know, on and on and on. And, you know, I used to tell people trading in the markets is one of the most fascinating ways I've ever learned to lose a lot of money. It's fascinating. Just fascinating.
Yeah. So,
that's going to be on my tombstone. It's one of my great all-time sayings. Anyway, so yeah, keep an eye on that. We were talking about the euro. So right now it's done nothing wrong. It still is well inside the uptrend. The forecast was for the market to bottom on December 7th and to rally to 131.28. At or near 131.28. We say at or near because the market, if it is weak, it will show itself by getting close to it. We got to 131.12, about a $200 difference, which is about four ticks on the S&P. That's equivalent to about four ticks on the S&P in terms of dollars. So we're pretty close, and if they can't reach it, it means something in our approach as well. So I don't have anything to add to the euro other than that for today. If there's no questions, we'll move on. Excuse me, move on from that because there's a couple other markets that I think are interesting. What is interesting is we don't talk much about the British pound, and I know some of the people trade it, but the British pound had a nice move yesterday, and then they're sharply down today as well. And this is an interesting situation if you want to take a look at the British pound. Just
here's
something
the pound
to watch.
Right here. This is it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thank you.
This is on an hourly. I'll put it on a daily. There we go. There's a daily chart.
Yeah, the British pound. And then finally, let's talk a little bit about crude, because this is in a, I think this is a very important market coming into next year. We want to see crude. We originally talked about crude bottoming. For those of you who have a reflected wave.
What month are you in?
You know,
on crude?
On crude, we're in the January crude, the F, and okay. I really don't know if that's the correct one or not. Maybe Bert, if he's on, can tell us. But I'm looking at January crude.
Yeah, okay. January crude is okay.
Hi, Bert.
That is okay?
Yeah.
Bert Schlichter, Daniel's Trading.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Good night, everyone.
Good night. That's our show. Good night. Yeah. Okay, so on this market real quick, 85.45, we had talked about on back on the December 6th that we wanted to see the market go lower to 85.45 into the reflected wave bottom that was due on December 7th for this market. Those of you with the reflected wave know what we're talking about. It came one trading day late, and they even spiked that bottom yesterday. But by staying above and closing above the 85.45, that indicated that this would be an opportunity for the market to rally, that the cycle had expressed itself on the downside and that we would see upward movement. Well, we have, and yesterday was a decent up day, not great, but a decent up day. Today we're pulling back some. They've done nothing wrong yet, but we do want to see continued daily and weekly close above 85.45 in the crude market, and that's January again. And we do have a roadmap for crude that you might be interested in seeing. If you are, you can come to pagetrader.com and check it out. I think it would be of some interest for people who might want to trade a little bit longer term and be involved in a bigger move where it would be wise, like we talked about yesterday, to talk to your broker about margins and so on, because there may be some larger news that comes out that, so you would know. And Bert, if you're still with us, I have a question for you. Are you still there?
No.
Bert Schlichter, Daniel's Trading. I just want to tell you, I was in Las Vegas at the old Showboat Hotel many years ago, and somebody had asked me to come there because one of the Jackson family sisters was going to be putting on a show in this little tiny lounge.
Oh, it must have been LaToya.
It probably was LaToya or somebody. And sitting two tables away from me, there was Janet Jackson. And that's when she was in great shape. You know, she's, whatever you think of what, but she's a beautiful woman. She looked nice. She was sitting there. She had a, two bodyguards next to her, and she was watching the program. And what I thought was really funny was that every time, I guess if it was LaToya, would leave the stage and come back on, the announcer would re-announce her as if nobody knew who she was. They had announced her like 14 times during the show. Every time she came back out, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm welcome to LaToya Jackson. That's what I'm doing with Bert right now. You know, Bert Schlichter, Daniel Striding, every time he comes back on. So anyway, that was just their way of running the show, and I guess it never really worked out for them because they finally demolished the Showboat Hotel. It's gone. And I think it might have been because of her performance that night. So
well,
they finally said, look, we just can't.
Town.
Yeah, we just can't
make it. Samstown. You can always tell when a performer goes out of favor with somebody, they get moved to the lower hotel.
If it's really bad, they demolish the hotel. I've come to a very distinct conclusion in my life that talent genes are not evenly distributed throughout a given family.
No, that's true. So. That is absolutely true.
Anyway, Janet Jackson is amazingly talented,
whether
you like her music or not. She really has
fabulous.
It.
She's honestly fabulous.
Here's what I want to tell you. I think Michael Jackson, what he was doing with his life, was trying to be Janet Jackson.
Well, he was definitely, he wasn't trying to be himself. He was trying to be something else. We don't know what that was.
I think Janet Jackson was a very powerful influence on his visual changes over the years. If you look at Janet Jackson and see her face, and her features, and you look at Michael Jackson starting from the 60s, and everything that he did was inching him closer to the Janet Jackson model. I really think there was something going on between him and his sister. I don't mean something like, you know, weird. Yeah. I mean something weird in the way that he was viewing his sister as the model. That's what he wanted to be
Maybe he was in between sexes somewhere.
Possibly.
He definitely had an identity crisis. Huge.
You know, also in his songs, when he sang about love between a man and a woman, a lot of the themes in his songs always had to do with other people not believing in the reality of the love. There's a lot of his songs where they say it isn't real, girl, but, you know, and how real his love is for the girl. I just noticed, you know, because I have a lot of his music, and I've noticed that that is a reoccurring theme in his songs. Amongst others.
Yeah, a sad waste.
They had the same plastic surgeon. That's probably why they looked so much alike.
You have to tell your plastic surgeon what you want done.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, plastic surgeons aren't just generic. You don't just go in and he just starts doing it. You got to tell him what you want.
Put my nose over here.
Anyway, what were we going to ask Bert Schlichter from Daniel Strader?
About the oil contract, if it should be January, if it should be March.
But I thought we moved past that, and I was going to ask him something.
Because someone's still asking the question.
Oh, Bert, what is your answer on that?
What was the question?
January or March for crude?
It's January.
January, okay.
And I saw the fellow's question that popped up on the screen there.
Mm-hmm.
And the breaking point that he's referring to was based on January prices.
Okay.
So what? Again, closes above 85.45 in January crude. Keeps us trade alive for the most part.
Bert Schlichter's Daniel Trading.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, if anybody has any confusion or is working with Daniel's Trading, Bert is a wealth of knowledge. He knows everything that there is to know about the system, about questions related to market or how you do things. Absolutely ask him. He's fabulous, and he's quick, and he's Daniel's Trading is, you know, has that great distinction of being very customer oriented, and he's fabulous. He's one of the best I've ever seen.
Thanks, Robin.
And he holds the world's indoor Guinness record for the most crunches on a cold Chicago day.
Ooh. Where did you get that from?
I don't know where he got that from.
That's good, Bill. I'll take it.
You'll take it? All right.
Yeah, I'll take it. Anytime.
He's crunchy.
Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch. That's what we're going to call you. That's your new nickname, Captain Crunch. Okay, we talked about the dollar yesterday and about the bottom that was due on December 13th. We had a question about the dollar and some other market. Maybe it was the dollar and gold, but I don't remember if it was the dollar and gold or dollar and euro.
It was the dollar and was a dollar in gold, yeah, it was.
Dollar in gold. Okay, so it appears that the market occurred one day early yesterday. The December 13th bottom occurred one trading day early, so the dollar is, it's not up a lot, but it's up a lot from, not even a lot, it's up nicely from yesterday's lows. So we would expect normally a multi-day sideways to up movement from this level. And so I don't know if that, I can't quite remember if that ties in with what his connection was with, between the dollar and
the question
and
was,
gold.
Could the dollar and gold both move up together?
Oh, I see. Okay. And my answer would be yes, but not necessarily in a given day, but over time, yes, they certainly could. I don't quite, you know, again, I don't quite look at the markets for an individual market. If it's going down, another one absolutely is going up. But in many cases, that is a backdrop behind a more cohesive trade that I might have on, that if I know that, if I'm short the S&P and bonds are in a rallying position because the S&P and often the bonds rally. So, you know, something like that would be in the back of my mind. But it's not something that's absolutely fixed in stone because it's it just doesn't work that way.
Well, also, too, we could trade sideways. You know, that's
right.
Part of the variable there. So sideways at higher doesn't mean parabolic higher. It could be just sideways. Mm-hmm. And so well, I think we found out today that there's, you know, maybe some bigger forces going on with gold. Than, but we won't.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. We want to keep our eye on the gold position and so on. We do have a roadmap underway in that. And we chose, by the way, for those of you in the roadmap, to not take any profits yet in gold because we want to really hold it for the purpose of the roadmap rather than short, you know, quote unquote short term trading it too much. So we're going to wait and see, and we'll talk about gold tomorrow as well into Friday. And
David,
I think
David,
oh, go ahead.
Do you? How about bless you? Do you have follow the Australian dollar at all?
I do. I mean, we've been watching it, Birch Lichter, Daniel's Trading. Let me just get this up here. Every time you come on, I want to reintroduce you, like they did, like the Jacksons do.
Except Bert's not trying to look like Diana Ross. That's the thing.
No, that's true. Oh, Diana Ross. That's another one. Thank you. Somebody must have typed that in. That's another
Anne-Marie
one.
Anne-Marie did.
Some morph between Janet Jackson and Diana Ross. That was
now
his
that,
model.
That I would agree with. That I would agree with.
Because his nose was a Janet Jackson nose, though. That was not a Diana Ross nose.
Yeah, that's
and it
true.
Was in its decent shape. And that's what
but,
I'm saying. It's a
but who got it
two.
First? Did he get it first and then she got it?
No,
I
no,
think
no.
He got it first and then she got it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't the Michael Jackson Traders Network, all right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Let me just switch over to that. Do we have a question on that?
Yeah.
Here we go.
I'll give you a question. What do you think of the Australian dollar?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what I think about it. We talked about the Australian dollar, the Australian daughter. I have daughters all over the world. I have an Australian daughter. This market is, I don't follow it as much as we do the others, and I started watching it because a listener had asked about it. But I think that it's in a bullish position because it's above a number that we had given out before, and I'm trying to remember what the number was. I think it was 104.64 was the number. And
104.73
was the number?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. And it's above that now, and that is a, in our work, a stronger position. If I'm correct about this, the market really wants to go up to 106.25. But I just would, you know, like anything else, since this is something we're somewhat new to trading, I would, let's see, let me just double check where we are. So we're at 105.10 in that contract in the December. I would just have to say that it's as long as we close the month, and I'm going to go with Bert's number, the 104.73, whatever he said. I don't have it all in front of me. That is the stronger position. I don't have an actual trade for it. And I will say this. If we get through the month of December without going up to those higher levels, then there probably is an interesting short position for this market. I would bet on that. I mean, that would be something that I'd be interested in taking. So let's let them show their hand here a little bit. I don't have anything else other than saying that a December close above 104.73, I'll double check that number later, would be the stronger position. But if having done that, they cannot go and test the 106 level, the 106.20 or so, if they can't do that, that really means, in a big way, that this would be a fake out mm-hmm. on strength for a multi-month decline, and a good one at that. So the market has a lot of interesting things that it does, and you just have to keep the lazy Susan of four or five of those things in your mind, and then take your very best interpretation of what's happening and trade it, and be willing to be wrong and then get back in and all the things we always talk about. Dwayne, I think that's everything I have for today. In today's session, we're continuing lower on the S&P, and we're breaking to new lows even right now. I think we've gotten down to 1416, and this is the lowest level, although we may go lower than that, this is the lowest level I believe that we had in our panel for today, is the 1416 level. So we'll see what they're able to do here. This clearly is a response. It is trading somewhat unusually today. This is clearly a response to the Fed announcement and other things that you guys talked about. So that's everything I have, Dwayne. I mean, there's, if you have any other questions about Michael Jackson, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, no, there's questions about corn, natural gas, and let's see. Who wanted to know? Paul wanted to know if you mentioned the parallel of the ES with the ES in December of 2007 shifted by one day.
The parallel. Could you say that whole thing again? Because I'm not sure I got that.
Did David Williams mention the parallel of the ES with the ES in December of 2007?
No, I didn't.
By one day.
No, I didn't mention that. I'd be interested to hear what that is. And I know that question might even be better suited to somebody like Mike Reed, who really is a, at least ostensibly, kind of a market. You know, he carries these things forward and goes back and checks dates and times and places. He may know that answer better when he's on. If we can get him on tomorrow or something, I'd be curious to see. But I don't have an answer for that. I didn't make that connection, and I haven't looked at it. That's an interesting thing, and I marked the date down. I'll have to go back on the cash market to take a look at that. Real quick, did say corn or soybeans? Because I flipped soybeans up real quick.
There was a question on corn and also on natural gas.
Okay. Let me go over to corn then real quick. I'm sorry, I'm banging all around here. I don't think I have much on corn right now. I want to tell you something. That corn, to me, has been in an unusual position for some time. We had talked about many, many, many weeks ago. Let me see if I can find it. I have it mixed in with some other charts here. We had a bottom that we had talked about. Let me go. You know, if I can't find it, then we just can't do it. Here we go. Okay, there was a weekly bottom. This to give you how many months back this was. The weekly bottom for September 24th. And the market stayed above the level at that time, which was about $7.37, and was closing above it. And the market did what I have to just tell you is unusual behavior that I don't understand. And if I don't understand something, I may look at it and try to understand it, but I just don't understand the motion in corn here since that point. Actually, since the week of roughly October 15th or so, from that point forward, I would not be able to tell you much about corn just for a short period of time here. And they are moving lower here. I see that. But I don't have any real indication to give you on corn. So what I'd like to do, and I think I mentioned this a few days ago when somebody had asked about corn, is I'd like to wait for the end of December to talk about corn if there's a trade there. And so even if corn has a really big move, like as an example, if corn were to go down to, is it $6.76? Is that the right way to put the prices?
Yep, that's okay.
Okay, so if corn were to continue on down to 676 or at or near that level, and we're pretty much higher than that, we're $7.10 now, if we were to get down there, I would be interested again in corn at that point late in this month. Now, late in this month, we won't be here, so it really will be a trade that will take place if it were going to in the first week of January. So I don't have a real interest in trading it here, though, because I just don't understand it at this point. I will understand it better after the near the end of this month. So I hope that's helpful. You think there's anything else? I wanted to flip over to soybeans and see. I forgot to take a look at that market with you today, Duane. You had something on soybeans recently with the 67 level and so on, and then let's take a look here. You know, honestly, I have to think that they're in a pretty strong position right now. Based on the daily chart, and if you are looking to buy breakouts, I wouldn't tell you this. I wouldn't mind you a person being a breakout buyer here in soybeans. And let me give you an idea, because we could have a pretty darn good run off of December 12th. Remember, we talked about December 13th being an important date in a number of markets. Now, I hadn't been looking at the soybeans, but I'm reading it as a bottom right now. So if that's, and that's normally what it would be. But if that's the case, then I like the idea of finding long entries for further advance in this market, just at a glance. And that's what I would say. So to be really safe, a person could buy breakouts from this market rather than trying to buy here, wait for the market to confirm more, and then take advantage of a decent move that the market could have on the upside here. So if you want, we'll address that tomorrow as well as we get a little bit further into it. I'll double check anything on that market because I haven't looked at it in a few days here.
I can do quotes if you're ready.
Please.
Okay. The topic for today is don't hold grudges. Grace fills empty spaces, but it can only enter where there is a void to receive it. And it is grace itself which makes this void. Simone Weil. Forgiveness is an act of admitting we are like other people. Christiana Baldwin. To err is human, to forgive divine. Alexander Pope. The weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is an attribute of the strong. That's an Italian proverb. And a man must learn
That's
to
great.
Forgive himself. Fick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like that. I love it.
Very good. Thank you, Robin.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to say goodbye to you today.
Robin,
I will see you tomorrow. And our topic for tomorrow at the in the Coach's Corner is on how to analyze a trade. Now, you might be saying, well, what the heck is the psychology and to analyze a trade? If you can create certainty in your trade as you take it, then you will have no emotion when you enter the trade. So I'm going through this topic because I find so many traders don't know how to look at a trade that has gone not as well as they would like, on how to examine it, how to fix it, what to look at. So that's why we're going to go into that topic, and we'll add psychology into the mix, because what we're doing is we're creating certainty so that when you take the trade, you feel secure enough to take it or to exit it. And that's why we'll give you some indications on how to look at your trades and how to monitor them, rate them, and do whatever you want to, but I'll give you some suggestions. So that's tomorrow's topic at 3 o'clock. We do that till 3:30. Okay?
All right. And, David, there was still a question for you on natural gas. Do you have anything? A couple people?
I don't.
Patrick?
Well, let me go double-check it. Most of the time, if I do have something really important on it, I will say it. I try to get it all out on the show, but let me just take a quick look. I don't have anything in particular. I would, let's see, we're in the March. Let me just double check anything. Yeah, let me save me on that one because we've had some unusual moves in natural gas. So give me till tomorrow on that, and I will come up with something if I have something to say.
Okay. All right, guys, that
Beautiful.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Duane.
We'll talk to you both
okay,
tomorrow.
Okay, yes, thanks, Duane. Thanks, Bert. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, David. Have a
All
great
right.
day, guys.
All right, take care.
Bye.
What time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you. With each day comes a new way.
Okay, guys. guys, that's going to wrap it up for us. Price has moved back down on the S&P 500 E-mini futures to the weekly trading zone at 1416/1417. We go back earlier in the week. We can see here that as price traded up, pulled back into the zone here for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 hours before it got geared up. This was coiling, okay? That's one term that's used for it. The term I use most often is consolidation. But coiling really kind of defines what is happening. Energy is being, it's like sort of winding a clock. And then that energy, boom, takes it right up. Got up to the next zone for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours. And then right on up to the next zone where it spent an unusual amount of time coiling up before an unusual event. And here's where it ran up, put in a bearish signal right there, sent it right back down. So now we're back inside of the framework. Goes from the zone to the zone, back to the zone, double top here at the zone, and then down to the zone, down to the zone. Okay, now see how we came through here, and there's one pass? Good chance, based on the way that went through right there, good chance that we'll see some consolidation here, right in here, okay, and then go back into this area. And whether we consolidate here or not, even if we trade a little bit lower, there's a good chance that we'll come back into this area right here for some more consolidation, because we came through it just so quickly on that 1 hour. Now over here, we did consolidate in that zone for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours. So it may be that we don't see it again, but I'm going to look for it. I'm going to look for it to come right back up into this area. And if it does, it's probably going to present an opportunity on the short side. But we'll continue to watch it. I will send out a tweet and let you know exactly what I'm thinking. If you caught the tweet last night from 1427, it's now traveled down to 1417. So that was a nice 10-point move. You had to hold through a little bit of a drawdown over here. If you took it on the second trip back down, then you were able to avoid the majority of the drawdown. But the drawdown was only 4 points. And so when you balance the 4 points up against the potential for a 10-point move, that's pretty fair. So anyway, hope you had some of it. Watch the tweeter. If I see anything of interest, I'll be sure and put it out there. That's going to do it for me. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading E-mini futures or to take a 1-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.